I think one of the really cool things about what we get to do in HR is work with different areas of the business and help them optimize what they're doing.
Welcome to We're Only Human, a podcast focused on blending research and practical advice to help today's HR, talent, and learning leaders improve business outcomes. Let's welcome your host, Ben Eubanks.
Hello, everyone. This is Ben Eubanks, host of We're Only Human, and I am so glad to have you here today. It's going to be a great conversation. I know it. You're going to love it. So we're going to talk a little about career transitions and things from an HR perspective, not just as we're helping people, but a meta discussion, a career discussion about our own career transitions within HR. Because one of the things that I've seen is over the years, I've been really good and focused about helping my staff, our own managers, our own leaders, those people manage those transitions for their people or for themselves. But we often sometimes skip out on doing that for ourselves. When you're transitioning to a new HR role, do you think about those critical things that you need to do at the 30, 60, 90 day marks? Do you have really clear goals before you ever step foot in that role? You know, even when you're interviewing, are you defining what that success looks like so you can hit or exceed those targets? Things like that, we don't often think about them from our perspective, and it's one of those things that I really, really encourage people to think through, and we're going to get really deep into that discussion today. I'm talking to a friend, Renee Robeson. She is super intelligent, super smart. She's got a great accent. All the things rolled into one. You'll enjoy the discussion. But as I was getting ready for this episode, I was thinking about all the different career transitions I've made throughout my life. You know, some of them early jobs were just, you know, those early jobs really just learning how to work and how to get into the workplace and those kind of things and developing relationships with others and just those very basic kind of skills like, hey, you've got to get up, you've got to be here on time, you've got to get this stuff done because if you want to collect a paycheck, those things are essential. But then over time, the kind of roles and the nature of those things changed. For me, it became less physical, thank goodness, and more of a mental or knowledge kind of work. Again, now I'm doing things that are purely that. If you discount standing on stage and sharing and speaking in that perspective, it's all knowledge work. But the thing that gets me as I think back over those transitions, you know, moving from my very first HR role in a nonprofit and the kinds of things that I learned there, the kinds of things I learned were to do and not to do in running an HR team, and then moving into another role working for an Inc. 500 rated fast-growing technology startup. Amazing environment, lots of really great stuff I learned there around culture and how to develop people and how to mature my own career. I had the best manager I ever had there was really good about helping me to manage and think through my own career strategically, but not everybody had that person. And so in the conversation today, I hope that you can look back and feel like Renee had that impact on you because she, even though I'm not making any career transitions anytime soon that I'm aware of, I felt like I learned a lot about how to do this better, again, more strategically, everything else, because she comes at it not just from an HR perspective, but also a little bit of an L&D, you know, perspective, those kind of things and everything else. So it's, again, really, really good conversation. One of the things as well, it's not just about jobs. I'm sorry, I focused just on that. But one of the things I love is how do we define our success in an HR role? She talks about how that looks. And for example, one way you can do that is if people come to you with business problems, not just HR problems, they don't come to you just with this issue with their employee, but with this issue with the business, and they're looking for your input, your insight, because you've proven your value. That's a really great sign of success. So if you like this conversation today, if you enjoy it, I would highly encourage you to share it with someone else that could use it. Someone that might be about to take on a new HR job, someone that's looking for a new career path and is not sure where they want to go next, or even someone that recently took on a new role and they're still in that early, you know, 6 months or less phase, and they're thinking about, am I making the impact that I thought I was going to before I started this job? If you know anybody in those kinds of instances, think through that for a moment and please share this episode with them because I think they'll appreciate it and I know that I would as well. Now, on with the show. Hello, everybody. Welcome to this episode of We're Only Human. I am Ben Eubanks, your host, and today we're going to talk about changing jobs. Yeah, anybody that's worked for any length of time has probably changed jobs here and there. And you know what? I'd like to think that in HR we're more strategic about that transition because we see so many of them happening from behind the scenes. But you know what? I've also witnessed this happening with some disastrous results, both in HR and outside. So here today to talk with us about this and some other topics is the amazing Renee Robson. Renee, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ben. It's really lovely to be here.
Absolutely. Well, I'm excited to chat with you and learn more about your new role. I knew you had changed recently. And so before we get to that, tell us a little about who you are and what you do.
Well, I'm a New Zealander, as you might be able to tell from my accent, but I live in Australia. I've been here for 5 years. And throughout my career, I've worked in a real variety of HR, learning and development, and organizational development roles. And at the moment, I am, well, as of 4 weeks ago, I'm the Performance and Capability Manager at WideX Australia. So we cover Australia, New Zealand, Hong Kong, and Singapore, and have a subsidiary called Bloom Hearing that we operate as well.
Excellent. So that's a long title. Tell me more about what you specifically do in your role, because I'd be curious.
It does. It takes up a lot of my email signature. So my role is really twofold, I think. So there's a senior HR business partnering element with different parts of our organization. But the main focus is about helping people do their jobs better. So aligning what our organizational objectives are with what we need to be able to help our employees do really well, and working with our subject matter experts to make sure that we've got all the tools and the resources and the expertise in place so people can just fly with their job.
Excellent. I love that. I love that. Thanks for clarifying, because it's one of those things that I love to hear about in terms of what you do, because HR has such a broad spectrum. If you're just an L&D, that's one thing. If you're focusing more on the organizational development, like you said, that could be another aspect entirely. So I wanted to hear that specifically. So 4 weeks in, approximately, talk about how you kind of approach this as a learning opportunity for yourself, as a growth opportunity for your career. I'm curious about that because, again, I can think back to times when I changed HR jobs, and I would like to think that I did it strategically, but looking back, I probably could have done some things better. So talk about how you kind of approach that.
Well, it was a bit unexpected, actually. I've been working with the YMCA for the last almost 4 years and absolutely love it. You probably have met people that work at the YMCA before, and it's almost verging on a cult. Like, people just adore it. People work there for a really long time, and it's a wonderful work environment. And so I certainly was not looking at a change. And last year I had a little boy, Milo, and went on maternity leave. And while I was on maternity leave, I was approached by a recruiter. Now, I'm sure lots of people in HR do this, and you answer the call and you be really polite and you go, yep, really nice to talk to you, really nice to interact with you. But no, I'm happy, but thanks for your time. And I did that. So I fobbed the woman off, Sarah, who's wonderful, by the way, completely fobbed her off. And she came back to me and she said, look, I really want to talk to you more about this. How about coming in and meeting myself and the People and Culture Executive? And I was on maternity leave and my brain was kind of starting to get back into that workspace. And I thought, there's no harm in going have a chat. It might be interesting. So I went and had a talk to them and I just fell in love with the company. They work across hearing aid manufacturing, retail, and then there's obviously a clinical element because you have audiologists and audiometrists in our clinics. They're global. They were started by two guys in Denmark in 1956, and the same two families still own the company and are really involved in the work. So it's global, but it's a family business. And I got talking to them and they were just so passionate about what they do and making people hear better. And I think for me, when I've transitioned into roles where I've been really happy, the key thing for me is that I can get excited about the business and that I'm surrounded by people that love what they do. I love the why. I'll always love the why. And I think I was in a really nice position of being genuinely happy in what I was doing. But seeing this opportunity and a new role come up that really had a nice focus on adding to the business and being a real strategic position, I was just too excited about to turn down.
Excellent. And I love that. The idea of going somewhere not for – because you were in a good place, there was no pressure, there was nothing pushing you to to change. And so you consider this in terms of, does the mission inspire me? Does it get me excited about the why? Like you said, is the reason they're doing this something that I can get behind? And I think in the past, again, some of the more recent transitions I made, I got to the point in my career where that was the only thing that would move me out of a role. You know, if I saw some amazing learning opportunity, or if I saw something that was really exciting in terms of a mission that, or a vision that I just could not go without being a part of. I felt like when I heard it, I'm like, I can envision myself being a part of this thing and impacting the world in this way. And once you have kind of bought into that, that's an amazing tool for selling the culture and selling the company, right?
Absolutely. And my heart will always be a little bit with the why. I'm continuing with them as a volunteer. And I suspect that one day, Ben, I'll go back to the why. You know, I'll end up retiring there or something, because that just, it's a beautiful organization.
Absolutely. So we talked about taking on this new position. What lessons do you think that this transition would offer for other HR professionals that are thinking about either a new role, maybe at their another company, maybe a promotion, and you're stepping into a higher level of leadership within your own firm, or even, hey, we're going to give you some additional tasks, we're going to broaden the scope of your role. What sort of things can we take from this transition that that might help them in that sort of thing, to think about it more strategically maybe?
I think being able to speak to people whose opinions you really value, and people whose careers you admire, and people that aren't necessarily in HR. I think one of the really cool things about what we get to do in HR is work with different areas of the business and help them optimize what they're doing. So people that I've worked with in a stakeholder relationship where I really value their opinion, I've found the career advice from that perspective to sometimes be more helpful than someone who's in a senior HR role. Because they see you in a different way. They're not just looking at your technical skills. So for me, a big part of what I did was I spoke to a few people in the organization and that I've worked with before about where they saw the best place for me to develop. What kind of things do I need to think about that's going to help me get to that next level? And I think being able to reflect on that and it not just be your family or your friends or someone that's in exactly the same industry as you is really valuable.
Interesting. I love the idea. We always talk about how HR leaders need to be business leaders, right? You got to know the business. You got to be able to interact and have those kind of conversations outside of our little jargon, our little, you know, world that we built for ourselves, our bubble, I guess. And I think that's a great way to take that a step further to say, hey, I'm going to be moving. I don't know that you didn't say necessarily those are like mentors necessarily, but they're still giving you advice like a mentor would, saying, hey, here's the thing that you need. Here's the gap that I see. Here's the opportunity that I see for you based on where you are, what you've done, your accomplishments. But again, without being bound by those preconceived notions of, oh, well, you're in HR, you have to get this certification, or you need to take this next step. You need to get this specific HR skill, whereas they might just say, you need to be understanding how the marketing works in the business and things like that. You're not going to get that kind of advice if you only talk to people within our little bubble, I would suppose.
Absolutely. And it's really helped me, I think, progress my career and think about it differently rather than just think about it in a linear way.
Absolutely. So you said a minute ago you are about 4 weeks in. So you're going to hit the 30-day milestone very, very shortly. What tips or advice would you give for someone when making their own 30, 60, 90-day, that kind of initial plan they're going to hit the ground running in a new role? Because, again, we sometimes think about that for other people, other positions. Hey, we have a new leader coming in. At this point, we need them to understand these key things. And we do that sort of outward looking, but rarely do we do that for ourselves as HR leaders, inwardly looking and saying, I'm going to be stepping into this role. These are the things that I need to know. What advice would you have on making a plan to do that kind of thing?
Number one for me is getting to know the organization. So whether that's the industry, whether it's the people within the organization and the customer, but that has to be number one, to be able to hit the ground running. So there's research you can do before you actually start the job. But then once you're in there on day one, making sure that you're talking to people within the business, making sure that you're asking them, hey, these are the people that I think I'm going to meet with to get an idea of what their world looks like. Is there anyone else you can recommend? Because often it's not the head of department that's going to give you the real gems. Sometimes it's the person that's worked there for 15 years across four departments in an administrative capacity, and they've got those little tidbits that help make you really successful. Number two is probably fostering relationships. So as we all know, to be a great HR business partner, relationships aren't number one. So who are going to be the people that you're going to work with mostly? Who need to be able to trust your advice? And then what do you need to do to foster that relationship? Are they all about work and your subject matter expertise? Or are they looking at how they can best integrate you into their world? Are they looking for you to know their business first and foremost? Or do they want to build a personal connection with you so they can trust you and your advice? Number three and four are probably things that, for me, are most important. And they're also the things that I think sometimes we're not great at in our field. One is being prepared to change your viewpoint if the evidence demands it. So really going in there wanting to learn and not holding too many assumptions from your previous roles and your experience, that helps you be a great HR person, but you need to be able to reevaluate how you think you should go about something. Like if your last organization was really policy and procedure heavy and that guided every decision, and this organization is smaller and more nimble and people don't respond the best to really detailed policies and procedures, you need to be able to let it go and deliver what they require. The last one is continuously learn. So accept that you're never going to be the best expert about any one thing. HR, people and culture, it's changing constantly. There's always new research out there. There's new research, new ways of thinking, and you need to be able to bring that into your organisation. Don't be that person that's still working in personnel management in 2018. And I think maybe just as valid, don't be that person that's still doing old school HR where it's about control in a business that wants you to be a stakeholder manager, that wants you to be able to contribute at a strategic level.
Absolutely. I love those. And I would agree with you that the one that be prepared to change your view is one that kind of hit me kind of hard, because when you think about it, you go through the hiring process and you're affirmed for those things that you have done. You're affirmed for those things that you believe, and you think they're hiring you for those kinds of things. But then you find out once you get in the organization that they might want you to adopt some of their practices or think more like them, or here's our culture and we need you to kind of fit with this now. We hired you for your skills, but fit with this culture here. And those kind of things can be a shock if you're not ready for them, if you're not prepared, and if you're not thinking flexibly, like, hey, there are going to be things when I step into this role that I am not going to foresee, and I am not going to be comfortable probably right off the bat with them. And yet that's a part of this. I'm accepting that when I'm accepting this role. And we don't think outwardly about those things or consciously about those things when we're making that kind of decision. That was a really good point. One of the others that I loved is talking about the fostering of relationships and really connecting with people socially. I ran a hackathon workshop last fall for HR leaders, and we talked about if you could change the onboarding process, what would you do to make it better? And one of the teams there, the winning hacking idea for this one session was, their idea was for onboarding new hires, you sit down at your desk on the first day and you have a list of job titles that you can pick from to meet with for lunch. And it doesn't tell you names. It doesn't tell you who the people are. It just says these are general job titles, and you get to pick three or four out of 10. And so every single new hire gets a
slightly customized experience, because maybe Renee is more interested in the marketing and the sales side of the business and how that feeds into the things that the organization's doing, whereas I'm more interested in the research and development side, the quality side. How do those things work and how do they operate? And so you get to kind of pick those things, and it starts building those relationships from the very beginning, because you intentionally get to kind of choose those people and they connect with you and meet with you as you're going through your first day at work. So that was a neat kind of thing that tied in there that made me think of that, because it's so critical to do that. And I love the point you made about it being that admin, that informal social influencer in the organization, that person that's kind of a hub for information, maybe not in job title, maybe not in the hierarchy in the org org chart, but in terms of the social flow of information, they might be one of the most important people that you meet throughout the course of your new hire experience.
And often those people, the receptionist and your executive assistants, just no matter the organization, you've got to meet with those people. They know how everything works.
They know what works and what doesn't work, what to avoid, here's the hot buttons. Hey, don't do this thing. It's funny because I remember one of our admins at one of my old jobs, she was, when I would walk the new hire around, I would personally introduce them to some of these different people and say, hey, here's the kind of information that they can share with you. And it never failed. Our admin would say, like, hey, on Thursdays, you need to think about this. And, hey, make sure you don't wear this stuff on Friday, because she thought about those things. I would have never thought to tell them, hey, you know, don't show up in a suit on Fridays. It's jeans. It's, you know, whatever. She was consciously thinking about those things, and so I love the fact that she kind of filled those gaps for me in terms of introducing them to the organization and bringing them in, because she thought such a different way, and the things that were important to her were probably on the radar for that person as they're starting the job and would help them feel socially comfortable and like they fit in. And those, for me, it was purely about, and this is where your technical information is going to come from, and this is where your leadership hierarchy is, and these are your subject matter experts. And that was just the approach that I took. So it was one of those funny things where at one point, after I had that conversation a couple of times, I went to her and said, thank you for sharing these, and please don't stop sharing those specific things, because the new hires appreciate that, they welcome that, and it never fails. I forget to tell them at some point throughout the process about that thing that they really do want to know. Oh, goodness. Love it. Love it. So talk to me a little bit about – we talked a little bit about the culture piece, right? We talked about this social connectivity. How do you really get clear on learning the culture of a company as you're going in? Is that something you have to do during that interviewing stage? Is this something that you have to do once you get on board? You have to kind of, you know, hold your breath and understand it after the fact? Because I'm curious. I know culture is hugely critical, and I would imagine that you do too. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm curious how you understand it when you took on this role, and how you kind of communicate that for people that are trying to take roles at your organization.
From an HR perspective, totally agree. Culture is absolutely critical to not just the feel of the workplace, but the effectiveness of people in their roles. It's the thing that allows you to make that right hire when technical expertise is equivalent. The person that's going to be most effective is going to be appreciate the culture and be able to contribute to it. From an HR perspective, the thing that I like to ask people, so if you're interviewing with the HR director or equivalent position, is who owns culture in the organization. Now, I've been in organizations where it's been a constant state of debate. No, we are people and culture. We own culture. We're the guardians of it. We guide it. And I don't want to work in that place. That place is about ownership and boundaries and the business not owning culture. And I think you need to be somewhere where the CEO, where the executive and leadership team, where the people managers, where every single employee feels a real sense of culture, where they own it, they talk about it, and they're deliberately trying to improve it. They're deliberately trying to foster that culture that they've committed to. It's really easy, I think, for people to rest on their laurels. So to know that people love working for them and just go, yeah, we've got that nailed. We don't need to be deliberate about it. But as I think we've all seen, that can go pear-shaped really, really quickly. Mm-hmm. You need to be somewhere where it's a constant state of conversation. And as people and culture, we can help with that. We know, technically speaking, what the levers are you can pull. What are the things that you really want to encourage? What are the things you want to avoid? But the ownership for it has to be within the organization's leadership. And that, for me, is a non-negotiable.
Very interesting. It's one of those things that I love hearing the debate on, because there are different schools of thought, I guess, on who owns it, who guides it. And the approach that I have always taken is, you know, HR might be kind of the keeper of it. We might help to safeguard it, protect it, but we can't own it, because we don't make all the hiring decisions. We don't make all the termination decisions or the promotion decisions. And like you said, the leadership that makes those decisions, they're the ones that are influencing the culture more than we ever could. We might get a little budget to, you know, throw a party or to do this thing that we think kind of influences that to some degree. But ultimately, at the end of the day, who you hire, who you keep, how you treat them while they're in the organization from a leadership perspective is what's going to influence and drive and feed that culture more than anything else that HR could do, regardless of what we think about ourselves, no matter how highly we regard our impact in the organization. We just can't have that same level of impact.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Awesome. So let's skip a little bit. There's one last really good question I want to ask you. So in a recent blog, I was reading one of your pieces you'd written. You talked about HR problems and business problems. I think this is a good segue into that conversation. So you talk specifically about how the business rates HR's service and value and performance, and how we rate ourselves. And could you elaborate on that a little bit, and then connect it back into this discussion on how we kind of hit the ground running in a new role? So first talk about how we see ourselves versus how the business sees us, and then we can connect it back into this whole career discussion we've had to date or so far.
Cool. A couple of years ago, I decided to finish my master's, and my research piece was around organizational drift. So how you gradually can drift from maybe your original intention, and support services role within that. So to do this, I interviewed organizational leaders and people within the HR component of the people and culture team about what our organizational mission was, what our purpose was, and how we in our roles were helping to deliver that. It was fascinating, and it was a bit of a lesson in an ego for me, because, you know, being a part of the team that I'm talking about. It was fascinating, though. The different business leaders interviewed had obviously different ideas and gaps that they perceived in the HR service model and strategic influence. It was varied by their experience and priorities, as you'd imagine. So the person who, you know, heads up that long-term strategic stuff within the organization was saying, we've got a gap there. The person who was looking at the operational execution of a particular business was saying, we're spending too much time in this space and not enough time supporting our frontline managers. And you expect all that. But what became clear, and it echoed a lot of research that's been done before, that people in professional roles often rate themselves higher at competencies than the people that they're working with. So for me, what this all came to was that without regular feedback and measurement, I think, of stakeholder satisfaction, it's really easy for HR and other internal service providers, so you know, you've got finance and health and safety and so on, to believe that they're delivering on what they consider to be the business priorities, but the business leaders to understand it differently. So as we went through this conversation and looked at other research out there and applied it to my organization, the main thing for me was about being clear on expectations. And this for me really links into how you become successful in that new role. You've got to be able to be transparent about what's getting priority. So as you're hitting those 30-day, the 60-day, the 90-day marks, what are you spending your time on and why? And being able to articulate that. And comes back to some advice I gave before about not assuming that you know better. So you need to be willing to have that conversation with your stakeholders and be prepared to be wrong and adjust your views accordingly. So you might think that this needs priority. Let's say employee engagement plans need priority because obviously that influences cultures and so on and so forth. When you have that conversation with your main stakeholders, it might be clear that that's not what they see as critical to their business and they would rather you prioritize something else. to have that conversation and it be productive, you need to have invested that time in developing such strong stakeholder relationships that when you have that discussion, which can sometimes be robust, if you still believe that the best course of action is, for example, employee engagement strategy, your stakeholder is going to go, you know what, I disagree with you, but we're going to do what you say because I trust you.
Talk for a second about that one, because that's one thing you've kind of touched on a few times, is that idea of we can't, I keep saying the word bubble, we can't exist outside of the business and try to influence and advise them, because we have to be there alongside them, and our stakeholders, we have to understand their problems, their challenges. And so we've kind of talked around that a couple of times. Would you speak for a minute about how you build those relationships with your stakeholders? Is it purely based on having a lot of conversations? Is there a regular cadence to it? I'm just curious, because when I presented recently on influence and change management and those kind of things, and the whole point of my conversation was we can't influence if we don't have some credibility. And so how do you build that credibility in those stakeholder relationships?
For me, the credibility is twofold. One is it's credibility in our HR expertise. So you've got to know your stuff to be able to have this conversation. But the second is having the credibility in knowing the business. So constant conversations, and as you begin in a role, I think listening far more than you're talking, asking probing questions about what's happening, why it's happening, and different people's opinions on how that's eventuated. If you've got good people skills, which hopefully you do when you work in HR, you're able to dig a little bit deeper and see the trends and the forces at play behind that surface conversation that you're having. That for me then translates in really being able to understand the business and the drivers and the levers that you can pull from an HR perspective to help solve their problems. I believe that the definition of success when you're in a strategic HR business partnering role, whether that's as an HR director, as an HR advisor or a business partner, is do your stakeholders come to you for advice other than HR advice? Do they come to you when they've got a business problem that they might not think there's a people element to, potentially, but you're able to put your HR hat on and provide expertise and encouragement, and they take your opinion on board? The most brilliant HR business partners I've ever worked with have been the people that the general managers and executives that they work with say, hey, get out of HR. I've got a general management role for you. I've got an executive position for you. I trust you so much, and you've proved to me you know our organization so well that I believe that this is a natural next step.
Excellent. I love that. I love it, and that is the perfect thing to wrap up with, because, oh, goodness, how many of us, for those of you listening right now, think about yourself, do a little self-reflecting, but think about it. Do your own stakeholders, the people in your organization that should be coming to you for advice, do they come to you for advice, number one, around the HR things, but number two, around those things that might just be tangentially, if at all, related to HR? Do they come to you to think through and to brainstorm about how to solve a business challenge specifically? I love that. That's a great challenge back to the audience to think through that. And if they're not doing that, what's it going to take? Follow some of Renee's advice here. Follow some of those pointers about how to build those relationships and to start having those conversations. Be really, really genuinely curious about how things work and ask a lot of questions, because that's how you build those relationships and people start to see you. It's funny, asking a lot of questions and being curious, people start to see you as the expert, which it seems backwards, right? You're asking questions because you don't know how these things work. But once you start gathering enough information from different people, you start putting those things together. Again, tying back to a point you made earlier, Renee, you start to see those trends that others might miss because you have this fundamental view of the people aspects of the business across any sort of functional, departmental, geographic boundaries. You see those things, those trends, because you're asking those questions. I absolutely love that, and that's a quotable quote right there. So awesome. If someone is so inspired, wants to connect with you, wants to learn more about the work you're doing, how's the best way to do that, Renee?
Oh, really keen to connect with people from on Twitter. It's how I've connected with a huge amount of people, particularly in SHRM, and mm-hmm. some awesome opportunities with the blogging squad for the national conferences that have come out of that. Always keen to have that conversation. I'm also on LinkedIn, and I've got a website, reneerobson.com, that I love getting questions through. So really keen to, I think, further the conversation about how we do this better. I love that HR is such a tight-knit community, really, for such a big profession. It's a tight-knit community of people who want to continually improve our contribution to the work that we do, and I love it.
Absolutely. And well, it's not hard to see that with people that are as passionate as yourself. So that's, as long as we can all aspire to be as passionate as Renee is, then the profession has no fear of going to its doom anytime soon. Awesome. Thank you so much for spending time with us today, Renee. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Ben. It's been amazing. I love the podcast. So it was, you know, a nice honor and a little stroke to the ego being asked to come on. And it's been fantastic. I've really enjoyed the conversation.
Excellent. I'll have to make sure to send a link to your boss to know how amazing you are. They already know that. All right. To everybody else, thank you so much for joining us on We're Only Human. I'm Ben Eubanks, your host, and I will catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to We're Only Human. Please take a moment to share this episode with another HR leader who might see it as a valuable resource in their daily work. For more information about the podcast and to see all our show archives, please visit upstarthr.com.